Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Monday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is September 21st. Andy, how are we doing?
Brendan, I am doing good. I mean, what a tournament.
Fantastic championship. Good weekend. Great September U.S. Open. You know, under odd circumstances, probably didn't know that we'd ever have, might not even have one this year. So I'm grateful that we had one at all. I'm grateful that we had it at Wynnefoot. I'm grateful that we had it, a unique experience of watching one in September is what I would say. So I'm glad we got it off and got it, you know, done.
And I definitely say best player won.
Yeah. Yeah. The thick boy, the chocolate milkman. He is celebrating right now. Will Knights has given us the content as we're recording. He sat down, not with a champagne, not with a Ricky's Corona Premier, not with, you know, a glass of Smith Devereaux. It's with the tried and true, the thing that got him there from the beginning. What he was chugging as a six-year-old doing algebra problems, apparently, to today. Chocolate milk. Surest bet of the day. But he was the best player. Absolutely the best player. Wasn't close. The strokes gained bore that out. The scoreboard bore that out. Like, everything about it, the strokes gained, you know, metrics broken down, you know, the subcategories bore that out. He was the best player on a course that is a, you know, tried and true USGA, you know, US Open setup.
Yeah. I mean, it was an incredible Sunday performance. Absolutely astounding Sunday performance. I mean, from the get-go, he hit fairways. I find it interesting. He gets off the course yesterday, goes straight to the range, starts just pounding drivers to fix. Mm-hmm. He drove it bad yesterday, but it's the same thing that Hao Tung Lee did, and nobody gave Bryson any shit about hitting. You know, he went and hit drivers, but he obviously fixed that. The governor got fixed. The governor broke down was fixed.
He was talking about something on six, or I don't know, his left elbow. The guy's making changes all day, every day. It's amazing. U.S. Open's like, I mean, every major championship is always earned, right? But this one felt like truly like not end of the road, but an achievement after a ridiculous process of transforming his body, transforming his game, this week. You know, the guy was hitting balls in the cold till 8:30 or whatever before he went and gobbled up a steak.
And I think he worked out.
It just felt extremely earned and deserved, and I know that pains some people to say because Bryson, you know, there's a lot of myth around Bryson. That's let's separate that, right? Like, this approach where I'm going to get big and hit it as far as I possibly can made sense in this current moment in golf, right? No one ever said that was stupid.
I don't know. I think people did because chasing distance was not something that's ever really been done great. You know, Justin Rose did it over a long... Nobody's ever just tried to go hit it 40 yards further one year to the next and succeeded. Like, there are stories of people chasing distances, changing their technique, changing their body, and failing all over golf. You know, and he did this. Like, I think something that goes underrated about this is just the stones it takes to do it. He was a top 15 player in the world when he decided I need to transform my body and I need to hit it forever. He was making millions of dollars a year and would have made millions of dollars a year for the foreseeable future to do this. He could have done this and failed and become, you know, the 200 ranked player in the world if it doesn't work and lost out on all that money. But he succeeded, and to a certain extent, it's almost like a quality of the great athletes of all time, like where you recognize that you need to be better at something and you come back after an off season way better at it. I mean, it's like when Jordan finally beat the Pistons in a way. I don't think this is the same, but he completely made over his body, changed his game, identified. And like you said, at the PGA, this all stemmed from last year's PGA at Bethpage when he realized he couldn't win and Brooks had such a huge advantage over everybody.
I think that's it. A lot of people are going to talk about, I don't know,
Liberty National.
Liberty National or this year. I think that's entirely it. Bethpage, another tilling ass design, very different in terms of, you know, greens and stuff like that. I think that's where
it all started.
It's like, yeah, but a similar setup except at the green. I think that's where it all started. He specifically called out, like, you know, I don't know that I could compete. I think he more or less put it on the setups then. Mm-hmm. You know, he was kind of blame, you know, maybe in a petulant way or whatever, blaming setups and blaming, like, why are majors like this? And he referenced that this week too. I got to go find the quote. I was going to write about it. I was thinking about writing about it. He talked about Brooks specifically at the PGA last year. This week, he brought it up again. I think that's where this all stems from. But you were talking about a lot of people chasing distance or changing. Wasn't Bryson like the perfect guinea pig for this anyways? Because he is this, like, you know, I'm going to do one length irons. Now I'm going to put sides face on, side settle. Now I'm going to just add 60 pounds. This is just kind of like who he is, bouncing from theory to theory. Granted, like, we got to stop with he's a neurosurgeon, he's a Nobel Prize, he's doing algebra at six. Like, I'm not, like, the myth around that has got to drop, it's got to fall, right? And
he's
all
a
the
golfer
gobbledygook that comes out around him of perceiving reality and air sensitivity and spritzing his ball, like, whatever. Like, I'm gonna doubt some of the mythology around him, but he is this, you know, constant experimenter, and it worked this time. It clearly worked. He was the person to do this.
Yeah,
the perfect person.
I mean, he has gotten so good. He couldn't putt when he came out on tour, and now he tried the side face on, and he got outlawed. You know, now he does this R block. He's great. He's a great putter, and you know, the one flaw when he came out of the break and he was big and everything, even when he won at Detroit, it was like, God, his wedge play, his around the green play is not good. This week it was extraordinarily good, and you got to hand it to guy, like, I think this final round overall, this whole performance and the final round performance in general is going to get overlooked just because of the story of him putting on masks. This was one of the greatest final rounds, maybe, like, of all time in golf. So the top 10 in the leaderboard, top 10 going 54 hole leaderboard, this is what he did to them today. He beat Matt Wolf by 8. He beat he beat Louis by 6. He beat whoever was in fourth by 11. Beat the next guy by 7, 6, 8, 7, 8, 11.
It's a lot of shots. A lot of shots from the top 10.
The next best golfer in the top 10 was 6 shots behind him today.
Nobody was under par today, right?
Just him was
just
under
him.
Par.
Was anybody even? I'm sorry.
There was, DJ shot even.
Okay.
But, I mean, he beat the next best score by 3 shots, and he was in the final group of a major.
Right.
That's not stuff that happens normally.
I think I saw ESPN research said something like he's the first player since Tiger in 2000 to play all 4 rounds at par or better and win. Like, this wasn't just. We'll get into the bomb and gouge and what this all says about golf right now. But one thing I took away, I flipped over too late to Live From, and he was talking about how he heard, I assume he's talking about Jeff Ogilvie, talking about how much he worked on his chipping around the green. And that may have been on your podcast. Maybe the Thick Boys listen to the TFE interviews with Ogilvie. I don't know. I'm going to go back and rewind. But he was talking about how he heard, had to be Ogilvie, worked so much on his wedges and around the game and how well he did that week. And he said that's what he spent time on this week at Wingfoot. When he got there, it was like, I really just focused on that. And maybe that's why by the end of the week, he was worried about getting his driving back, you know, late Saturday night. But he said that was a concerted effort. And I think that speaks to how dominant he was, like, through the bag, tee to green, to the bottom of the hole. And this will be, I think, sadly, not sad. It will be framed too much in the context of the ball debate and of how the U.S. Open player and winner has changed. But Bryson was awesome, every facet of the game. He was better than you just talked about. 11 shots, 8 shots better. That's not just hitting it 375 yards.
Yeah, and those are completely independent things, and you should not take anything away from Bryson because he played the game of golf the way the game of golf is played right now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's playing. Well, the other thing that you have to sit back and appreciate, and I've poked a lot of fun at Bryson. I've doubted what he's going to do. I might be one of the haters that Azinger kept harping
that
on.
That had to stop.
For the last 2 hours of the telecast. The doubters. But yeah, you have to appreciate, and I always have appreciated, people that zig when everybody else is zagging.
Sure.
And sure. Just not being afraid to do that. And I guarantee Bryson, he's not the most popular guy on tour, but he's okay with it. And I'm sure for a lot of his, like, I'm sure there are moments where he probably felt bad that, you know, why don't people like me more? I'm sure that happens, but he does it his own way, and you have to respect that because the results have been awesome. And, you know, he's 27 years old now, and obviously what he figured out has worked in majors when everybody didn't think this would work in majors.
Can you make that definitive claim? Because it's been two. I think you can. He's won one. It's hard to say.
He didn't. You know, he didn't just win one. He
lightning in a bottle.
Decimated.
Right.
Decimated right. The field. Like if we keep playing this, this just keeps going.
Yeah.
Like it's not like. I think he just wins by more and more if you extend this tournament out.
Yeah, I think you're right. Was there, because I know the answer to this, so if you want me to go first, I'm happy to do that. Was there one shot, one hole, one sequence that really stuck with you that kind of summed it up why he was so dominant today or this week? I know for me, that drive on 16, I will think about for a long time, just really stuck with me. Like, based on where he was at the leaderboard at the time, and, you know, it sounds super douchey to say, but I've been to that hole, I've seen it. Like, I remember it really well, but just being an ass kicker and that being a par four and him just nuking that drive kind of over that dog, like up and over and just rolling and rolling and going. I don't know why that one will just sum up the entire week of how he was so much better than everyone else. What about you? Was there something that really stuck? I think people talk about number 9 a lot, the two eagles, but what stuck with you?
So I think it was number 4, where this is what's going to get lost so much. It was he hit that chasing iron up there from the rough. It wasn't just... It was about the power, but also knowing how to hit the shots from the rough. Like, that was a really creative shot, and he bounced it up there. It required touch, required skill. And I think that's something that you can attribute so much of it to power, right?
Yeah.
But you can't, sure. That's the stuff that made him win by so much. And I mean, everybody's going out there and just getting smoked by the first 5 holes, and he goes out there and plays at 1 under. And for Matt Wolf, that had to be so hard, you know, because you're playing your ass off. And Matt Wolf, meanwhile, is in the middle of that fairway, and he's probably thinking, oh, I'm going to pick something up here on Bryson. I hammer to drive. He's got a wedge in, and Bryson just hits it in there stiff, you know?
Yep.
And that was a hard shot. I mean, everything runs away there. That was a great shot.
There was talk, I think Rich Lerner said, you know, the door to Chris Como, everybody should be pounding them the door to Chris Como. Like, I think like when we do this, we kind of discredit the talent a little bit. Like the guy won the NCAA title, USA ever. Like he was an amazing player before this. Won a bunch of money on tour, won tour events. He seems really indebted from the way he talks to Como and in terms of working this out, this thick boy approach. But
what Como deserves so much credit for is not being Ledbetter and not being rigid and saying this is how you have to swing the club, right?
Yeah, yeah. Totally separate random thing. But I could tell Randall said Como, basically credited Como with getting Tiger out of the chipping yips as well. He's like, Como will never say this, but it was clear the two have talked quite a bit about it, and I don't know. It's just a totally random aside that I'd never heard before. He credits Como with getting Tiger out of the chipping yips. Anyways, but he was working with kind of an already great canvas, right? I mean, the guy had already done a ton. What else about Bryson? Impressed you, sort of I displeased mean, you,
the,
anything?
The other aspect of it is it's good for golf in the sense of you've got this player. I don't necessarily love the way he plays golf. I think, you know, me as a traditionalist and somebody that is opposed to the what technology has done to the game, I don't necessarily, I just think it's ridiculous how he play that he's able to play the way he does because of what's happened in the game. But I appreciate the fact that he's not normal. He's not just a boring guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's weird, dude, for sure. Not a guy you'd have a glass of chocolate milk with, probably. He's definitely a weird guy, which, you know, that's my subjective judgment. He might think I'm a completely weird guy, and that's fine. But that doesn't make him a totally fascinating character, and some of that weirdness is what's so fascinating about it.
He's got mainstream draw, which is something the sport needs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like my friends who are casual golfers ask me about Bryson.
Which is what scared me about the Detroit thing of like, don't film me, man. Protect the brand. Like the brand should be it all. The whole package. That's what the mainstream draw is, right? What are you giggling about?
I'm just laughing about the whole package.
Right. Well, let me turn serious for a second. What setup and or course this week would Bryson have not won on? Is there anyone? Is like what would have not been? Okay, we're just talking about how great he was all the way through the bag. Is there something out there where he would not have won on, or something that, you know, would have punched him in the mouth more?
I half wrote an article this morning that I'm hoping.
Oh, I don't want to spoil that.
I'm hoping then. I'll talk a little bit about it.
Okay.
I think where you could have complaints about the USGA setup, it's not about the way they set the golf course up, because they set the golf course up. And this is, I talked to a friend of mine, Matt Wharton, who's a superintendent this morning. And he said a great line. He said, you know, this just isn't my father's US Open.
Okay.
Like it's not my father's US Open anymore. These guys play completely different style of golf. And everybody looking for the U.S. Open to be this grind fest and this, you know, protect par, carnage everywhere, doesn't understand that setup that created that history of the U.S. Open, it just doesn't exist anymore with the technology and the way these guys play. And the setup, in a way, it played right into Bryson's hands, played right into all the power players' hands. Because you're just putting these narrow fairways are impossible to hit, but then the rough is thick everywhere and it's predictable thick. Where these guys struggle is with unpredictability. The hardest shot.
What does that mean?
Okay,
predictable versus unpredictable.
So the rough's thick. The ball goes in there. You know how it's going to come out. It's going to come out dead with a knuckle. So you're going to have to just play shots that land on the front, land short of the green and run up, or you're going to have to take your medicine. Every single time you're in the rough, you know that's what you have to do for the most part. And it's easier for these long hitters because they have wedges in. So that loft of the club plus the predictable nature of it, they never have to think about, okay, what's going to happen with this ball? They know the way. If it comes out good, it's going to come out like this. If it doesn't, I'm right in the front of the green. Where we saw people actually struggle in the rough this week was the outside of like the really bad lies where people can't get it anywhere. Where we saw some really interesting stuff was the shorter rough, where we saw people get, catch flyers out of nowhere where they didn't understand what the ball was going to do. When that ball is in 3-4 inch rough, maybe 3.5 inch rough, the ball sinks down and you look at that lie and you go, I don't know if it's going to come out dead. I don't know if this is going to jump, especially for high speed players, high speed, low spin players. That is
the
hardest.
Everybody,
which is everybody
today.
That is the hardest shot in golf for them, is that lie in semi, like kind of thin, not your first cut, but just a little longer rough. That lie drives them nuts because they can't figure out, that's the hardest shot for them to control. So we've got this old setup, this old adage of setup, kind of tradition with the U.S. Open. This born from when they played with Bolatas and persimmons. You know, when you were Which hitting is, 5 irons out of thick rough, it's impossible to hit a 5 iron out of that rough. Yeah. But it's not impossible to hit a wedge. Like, a hacking out a wedge is what you do. And Bryson had wedge into every green.
Yeah.
You know, no matter where he hit it. So it's the idea of getting that unpredictable nature. And I think the place that does it the best really is the Open. We see the firm conditions. We see the unpredictable lies when you're off the fairway. It's that wispy fescue. It's a little bit different. But you have no clue how that ball is going to come out. And that's and then the ball goes further away. The long rough all around the green had a similar effect. You miss it bad. It's shooting over the green. That rough just stopped it right next to the green. Like, we didn't see any balls tumble away. And that is what you have to do. You have to... These guys can't be in constant control and know what's going to happen. And this setup, they knew what was going to happen. That in this setup, the greens would only get better the more you gave, the more unpredictable that rough, the shorter the rough was, the better the greens would play because there would be more angles. And sure, the scores would be lower, but it would be more difficult for these guys from a playing sense, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Difficulty isn't necessarily score to par. If you're measuring difficulty on score to par, I got news for you. Par's just a fucking number.
Yeah, right. I gotcha. What real quick, because not everybody, we do these dailies and the daily during the week. Most people probably listen, but if you didn't, you're talking about the rough around the green. Just Saturday, you shouted this out. Zach Blair, right? Talked about the guys don't bitch about Wingfoot in the way they might about Shinnecock or something because of that long rough around the green, because the ball's not rolling away 30 yards away and they can stew about it and start
screaming. Listen,
I'm
not saying short grass around Wingfoot's greens. Wingfoot never had grass. Like, that's not the way it's designed. It'd be a nightmare to mow the backs of a lot of those greens. I'm talking about just like rough that the ball still rolls through. Like, when Patrick Reed hit the shot on Saturday, or not Saturday, on Friday, on 4, he hit a shot that shot through the green.
Went through.
And that ball should have gone out of bounds.
Tumbled, yeah.
Like, that's one of the cool features of that hole with back pins, is the out of bounds is right there. And if the rough wasn't cabbage, that ball's out of bounds. And that all of a sudden makes that approach shot way harder, way more difficult. Scoring wise, it might not reflect it, but from a difficulty, when what you're thinking about as a player, that's more difficult. It's more challenging.
So explain to me, I guess we're going off track here. How do you design and maintain unpredictable rough? What are you specifically talking about? You're just talking about shorter rough?
I'm saying shorter rough, which would be, you know, everybody's going to look at it and say, you know, this is easier rough. Like, that what happens is everybody doesn't think two shots out, right? If I cut that rough down to 4 inches, guys might shoot lower scores. But they will hit great shots in order to shoot those low scores. But what will also happen with that 4-inch rough is people will think they can hit shots that they can't, or they will misread the lie. And uh-huh. when they misread the lie, all of a sudden sixes and sevens are in play.
And it starts playing with them for the rest of the round.
Exactly.
The
so you start missing fairways and you misjudge the lie three times in a row. When you're hitting that next one out of that lie, you're going to have a lot of doubt in your mind. But with the rough the way it was this week, you hit it into the rough and you knew, okay, if I hit this and it comes out decent, this is what I have to do. If it doesn't come out that bad, if it comes out worse than I think, it's going to end up just short and I'm okay.
I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense. I think, you know, the external pressure of you came, I think that makes sense. The external pressure of the USGA. You saw it this week, how people lost their shit because people weren't shooting 85 all week. And you start mowing it down. I think there are just externalities around that.
This is the reality, though, is that the game is fundamentally different. So the way, the approach that you set up a U.S. Open has to fundamentally change. And I'm not talking about the way it was set up. It was great. It was firm. It was the right. They had the good pins. Like, the only complaint from pins is they didn't put one in the back left of 18. That's the best pin on that hole. That was a huge disappointment. But outside of that, the firmness, the way it was very, you had no player complaints, which after the run that the USGA has had two years in a row with no player complaints is a big thing for their, you know, their internal PR, their external PR with players. But from the sense of just ideal, the philosophy of which you set up a golf course has to change because the game has changed.
Was Olympia Fields that rough? Because I think
yes.
DJ talked about that, like, oh, you could hit it out of that. Like, it's not like this where it's, you know, just muscle it out.
Exactly.
Olympia Fields, okay.
But it was extremely unpredictable, which was why we saw guys just hitting it over greens, coming out dead. Like, we saw guys befuddled by that rough because it was baked out and it was thinner. It might have been 5 inches, but it was thin 5 inches versus this lush rough that was extraordinarily predictable.
Let's do an ad read real quick. We got a lot more on this, I think. We're getting some quotes from Bryson about setup and stuff, and we got to obviously talk about a lot of other players. Let's do an ad read for our friends at athleticbrewing.com. I'm going to do the promo code right up the top here. The promo code is FriedEggFall20. You get 20% off your entire order. Not a beer, not a half a beer, not a six-pack. Whatever you order, you get 20% off. Athletic Brewing is a non-alcoholic beer. It's become a staple of my fridge. Something, honestly, I'm not sure I would have sought it out or it ever would have become a part of my fridge if they hadn't sponsored. Not gonna say it's a miracle drug or not gonna sell you a bunch of hot air, but it has become a staple of my fridge. When I need a beer, I need the taste. And I can't get worse for the wear, or I can't get tired. I got four kids. You got a newborn. There's just, it fills a nice gap in the fridge in my life that I didn't know I had or needed.
Or the other thing I use it for is if I've had two or three and I know that I can't have six or seven.
But you still want the taste. You got to keep the train. Yeah.
But I need to keep the train somewhat on the tracks because I got a lot of stuff to do the next morning.
That's true.
That's where it fits in perfectly. I just got two more six packs.
I did too.
One of which I'm excited to try out the new Oktoberfest.
Oh, I didn't get that. I'm gonna have to lodge a complaint. No, but that's the other point here is like it's not punishment. Like it's a beer you want to drink because of the taste. Whereas like you know some of the other NA beers just like. For show, and it tastes horrendous. It tastes like, you know, my usual phrase, piss in a bottle. This is an actual beer. It's an IPA, or they have the Upside Dawn Ale. I think that's my favorite. You're talking about some Oktoberfest here. So there's like, it's actual beer. It tastes like a beer. You know, it has the filling, this, you know, fills you up like a beer. The URL, again, is athleticbrewing.com. And the promo code is FriedEggFall20. Also, free shipping nationwide. I should know. That's critical.
And Bryson would like it because he could have an athletic beer, a brewing beer to celebrate his victory and then go hit the gym.
There you go. That's true. That's true. It might be a, yeah. Let's see if we can get him activated. Okay. Late breaking quote from Bryson. I would like to get your reaction. They made the fairways too small for this week for the guys that were really hitting the fairway.
Yes.
This is kind of what you were getting at. If it's too narrow,
before the tournament,
length is going to win. Too wide, length is going to win. Do you agree with that last
part?
There's
a bell curve.
Okay.
So if you know, like say Bryson hits it 80 yards when he misses each way, the cone is 80 yards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Left and right when he misses.
Like Brandel over here talking about dispersion cones.
Yeah.
See Brandel coming around. You know?
Kevin Bohr is a great person to talk to about this.
Okay.
Twitter.
Our professor at UGA mathematics.
So the reality is that when you make them narrow, then the accurate players can't hit enough. They're still going to miss so many that I thought Erin Hills was a great venue because it allowed short hitters at 40 yards wide. Those accurate short hitters could hit every single fairway. They went out every day and thought, I can hit every fairway today. Like at Wingfoot, you go out and you're like, God, if I hit 8 fairways of 14, I'm going to kill it. But then you miss 6 holes and you've got 4 iron into the green and Bryson has pitching wedge.
I hear all you're saying, but just the case you would have to make to all, like, this feels like some sort of public policy that makes sense for everyone, but politics would just ruin it all. You know, one of those things that's just a no-brainer for everybody. Like, I don't know what the recent example of that would be, legalizing gambling or something. I don't know, but politics just ruins it. You can't, like, I'm trying to imagine you going to make the case to the general golf consumer that Erin Hills was what you wanted, and I don't know.
From like, a fairway width, Erin Hills was a better... It rewarded accurate players more than Wingfoot did.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I don't disagree. I'm just trying to think of how we could get to this becoming an accepted.
So what happens is when the fairways get super small, if you're an accurate driver or you're just a driver of the golf ball that's having a great week, your expected fairways hit and the inaccurate expected fairways hit are both going to be very small. But when you get to 30, 35 yards wide, your expected fairways is going to increase dramatically compared to the inaccurate driver. They're still driving it inaccurately, but you're driving it so accurately that you can hit almost all of them.
Okay. All right.
And Jason Day talked about it. He missed the cut at Erin Hills, and he was like, you know, I struggled to find sight lines out there. And if you don't drive it in the fairway here, you're dead, you know?
Yeah. Wasn't that the Rory issue, too?
Rory had MC DJ. DJ did, too.
Yeah.
There's something here, too. Who would you say are guys that every major are going to be in it?
Like DJ, JT, I don't know. Every major?
Like, who are the most consistent over the last 2 years? Who are the most consistent guys in majors?
Louis, maybe? I don't know.
Like Xander, DJ,
yeah, Xander,
Rory,
Xander for sure.
Tony Finau.
Yeah.
What Finau's do all those one. Guys do?
They murder the ball, right?
Yeah. So Brooks, obviously, I don't know why we missed Brooks. Brooks is in there.
Yeah, of course.
They all murder the ball. And what murdering in a major with thick, rough, and narrow fairways, which most of them are, you murder the ball, you're set.
Yeah.
There's no hope for the shorter guy. Like, look at, I mean, Todd played great.
Yep.
And he finished 23rd.
So... Let's talk about the impact of this.
Even Kokrak. Kokrak has been relevant at majors.
Hey, I'm done. Yeah, he has. I'm done with the bagging on Jason Kokrak. I'm putting my foot in the ground. I'm taking a stand for Kokrak.
Mr. CT Machine.
He's such an easy target. Like, back off. Back off of Jason Kokrak. The guy's been killing it on tour. He's just an easy target. You know, there's no conflicts there. Everybody can pick at him. I'm going to stick up for him. Now, you know, Northeast Ohio, and it's just such, it's such easy low-hanging fruit that, you know, offends nobody. I'm out. I'm now a co-crack defender. Anyways.
Wow.
What is...
I didn't see the co-crack.
I didn't either.
The leaning in. Either. You're all in.
I think I'm just sick of people picking on Jason Kokrak. Find a more, you know, a more uncomfortable target. Like, come on. What is the impact on the next generation? We heard a lot about that. Is this just, everybody's going to start pumping iron? We don't need to talk about it, right? We just kind of went into the setup issue.
Do we not know what's happening? Don't we see it every single year? The tour is going to get younger and younger. I mean, we had a 21-year-old and a 27-year-old in the final group of the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. Like, the tournament that experience is supposed to matter, that, you know, like, it's all going to be speed driven. It's the same thing that happened in tennis. Like, the only thing that golf has that all other sports that aren't speed driven have, like, every other sport based off of athleticism is speed for the most part with skill.
Sure.
But, like, as soon as your athleticism fades, you know, you're kind of done. And I think golf's going to go in that direction generally unless they address the setup. Like, you have to counter speed and power with your setup decisions.
This just felt like more of a conspicuous slap in the face. Like, everybody's going to go the thick boy route. Am I wrong? Or I mean, they already were. They already were.
Average driver on tour is 297. Yeah. Average.
Yeah. I'm talking about, like, the
300
like,
yards is average on tour. When Tiger came out, he hit it 300 and everybody was like astonished.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Where is this going? Well, look at that. 20 years later, that means 320 is going to be average. 330.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Bryce is going to 48 inches.
He says he 48 inch driver. Says he wants to get up to 245 by the Masters. Let's talk about Bryson's future now, not the what's coming behind him. I mean, he did well at the Masters as an amateur. I don't know what he's done since then. I don't think he's done much of anything. I assume, like, Torrey Pines probably sets up pretty good.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Kiowa, I don't know, maybe slightly less so. It just feels like, you know,
I think
now that he's figured out the major calculation, to use a cliche, because we have to use something mathematics related when we talk Bryson, but it just feels like he's going, this is just the start, if that makes sense.
But based
on all the spotlights we did, maybe that's a foolhardy kind of thing to say. You
success
might get one
in
and
golf
you,
is fleeting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think he looked at it and thought, I can maximize a 10-year window. I mean, he is... This is another trend of this generation is going to be shorter careers, is going to be just maxing out. And yep. I think that's, you know, we're looking at if assuming he stays healthy, assuming he doesn't end up in a straitjacket, as that famous quote about Bryson suggests, he is entering where he has to be considered one of the favorites at every single major championship. From the standpoint at Augusta, and I tweeted this and people... saying, oh, I'm sour grapes. This is a real thing. He uses a greens book more than anybody else in golf.
Yeah. Yeah.
They had
the compasses going, yeah. too. He and his caddy had the compasses going. They had the greens books working. You will not get a greens book at Augusta. You made
Augusta
that
National
Twitter.
Does not allow greens books. To my knowledge, there aren't greens books at Augusta that you can just, you know, memorize.
Uh-huh.
And I think... the last 2 years at Augusta, he's been near the bottom of the strokes gained putting statistic from the people that have done the individual calculation. He has been at the, like, Joe Pita, Justin Ray. He has been near or at the bottom of putting there.
So he is absolutely excelling within the confines of what's allowed right now, the game that's being played. And whether it's a game you like or find appetizing is a separate issue, but he is the one of the best, if not the best. But he's gone now, T4, right? Win, dominating win, like an all-time performance on Sunday. And I guess that's the next question, the Masters. People, you know, he's talking about hitting it up into 14 fairway for 13. It's just, I think it gets back to our original point. He's absolutely fascinating right now. Good for golf. If he's trying to, you know, cut it up to the first green or whatever he's trying to do, it'll be fascinating to watch. And I mean, do you think it's going to hasten change?
Great segue. I just got tweeted. Archie Maddox just tweeted this at me. A quote from Xander. Question was, is he revolutionizing the game? Xander's response, maybe he is just exposing our game.
Ooh. Xander, who was, you know, over the zone of tolerance last year. I mean, I think that's an uncharacteristic quote from a pro who's at the top of the,
who has a,
you know,
big equipment deal.
I mean, we heard Rory at the beginning of the year say quite clearly and plainly there should be bifurcation. He said that at Riviera. He'd be in favor of rolling
back the
ball.
Tiger Woods has been very outspoken. Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer. Yeah. I mean, Bryson's quote about, you know, fairway. I mean, the telling thing on the telecast, I mean, on 16, your moment, what I'll always remember that for is while this is going on, Dan Hicks, I think it was Dan Hicks, was talking about the club purchasing property to stretch that hole back 40 yards, over 500 yards, make it relevant. And you hear this guy, you know, first U.S. Open since they've done this, they spent millions of dollars on the property. It's cost $40,000 to build a new tee box. You do this, all this money, and this guy comes out there and goes and hits driver fucking wedge on the hole that's supposed to be retain its, you know, we want guys hitting four irons into the screen like, you know, they did in 2006. They were hitting four irons in, and this guy just goes and hits a wedge.
Yeah. Yep. That's okay.
I mean, at a certain point, if you want balance and you want variety in the game, the stadiums have to be preserved. And the shot values at those stadiums have to be preserved. And right now, golf has outgrown all of the stadiums, and it's just a futile, extraordinarily expensive task chasing, trying
to
stay. Yeah, it's just dumb. At this point, if I'm a course, I'm just saying, fuck that.
You don't try to host pro events.
No, I'll host them, but you know what? If they shoot 20 under, whatever, I'm not going to pass the cost on to my membership to do this.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I just want to be very clear about this. What Bryson did today was an amazing feat.
Exactly.
And worth celebrating. And I think I worry that too much of it's going to be, like, I'm not saying it's unjustified, but it shouldn't be wholly discussed in the framework of the ball going too far and, you know, the game becoming sanded down, the skills, because his skills are the best. They were the best by a huge margin, just as Tiger's were in, you know, 1997 or whatever. Like, he beat up, he raced ahead of everybody. It's a different kind of game.
Yeah, it's just, the question is, do you want this game where it's just hit driver as hard as you can, wedge it up there, you know, get good at everything, get good at wedges, chipping and putting? Or do you want the game like Hale Irwin going driver 2 iron into 18 at Wingfoot? Think about that. Driver 2 iron. And he needed to make par to win a U.S. Open.
Who are the constituencies who don't want that? PGA Tour.
Equipment.
And title.
PGA Tour. Like, if I'm the PGA Tour, I'm a player on the PGA Tour, why would I want any sort of change that could threaten my future earning millions of dollars?
But it just feels like we're getting a few more of those voices. That's a little bit of a crack. I don't know if Xander meant it, you know, roll back the ball by saying that, but using the word exposed is a pretty strong verb. That's a strong word, and Rory's gone so far as to directly say it. There should be bifurcation. So, all right, let's talk about other aspects. Let's get off Bryson and setup and distance and all that. What did you make of the coverage? How was NBC? We were doing this venue thing. Great turnout for that.
Yeah, thank you, everybody.
I guess
that came out.
Did well. That's all I'll say. What did you make of the coverage? How do you think NBC first back on the call with the USGA? What did you make of Azinger, the cliche sandwiches? Was, I think, the phrase you used last week. What did you make of them?
The more the guy talks, the worse it gets.
He was good, and it's gotten bad quickly. I don't know that he's like the worst. He's not.
I honestly think Faldo's better.
No, Faldo was not bad this week. Faldo is where Faldo gets in trouble is like just the week to week grind on CBS, where it's clear like I'm at TPC River Highlands. Like
I'm telling
this.
You, Faldo's better.
Come on,
serious.
That's a bold statement. I don't think I'm ready to go
here,
there.
Golf's got this problem where they feel like the person in the booth has to be a major champion. And a lot of the best analysts in other sports aren't all-time great.
Yeah. Why would they feel beholden to that? That's the dumbest thing ever. Like Emmitt Smith, one of the greatest, he was the worst.
Remember Magic Johnson when he did the NBA?
Yeah. Kirk Herbstreit, like who's ascended to the throne of college football, like wasn't like the Heisman winner.
Yeah.
He wasn't very good.
And then they did Monday Night Football and people were like, this last week, and people were like, why can't we have this every Monday?
Yeah.
So, and even Tony Romo was a really good NFL player, but he wasn't a four-time MVP. He never won a championship. Like my favorite guys to listen to talk about, like Aaron Oberholzer, who did the venue thing with us. He has great thoughts on the game of golf. He's got perspective. Like he played with Tiger for most of his life. He can talk to how the game changed. Brad Faxon, you know, he not an all-time great. He's got plenty of clout, but like that is going to prohibit him from getting that first chair spot ever. And to me,
that's a tried and true. I mean, once requisite.
Think about the turnover of the spots. It's you get the job and you have it for 30 years.
Never.
So you know,
Norman seemed to be the only one in the modern game that truly effed it up, and I think it sounds like he really worked hard to do that.
Other thing that they really failed on was showing the golf course, and they did Matthew Wolf such injustice yesterday by not showing like, okay, this guy landed into this contour perfectly. He had 2 yards of error, and showing the greens and like actually trying to educate people on how difficult of a shot this was and why. Like, okay, he's coming from the rough. He can't control the spin. He has to land it in this spot in order to get this shot up there. And then showing, like, there were so few low camera angles that showcased, like, what makes that place so cool. Like, you could have watched that telecast and you'd be like, people talk about these greens. I don't know anything about it. And there was a couple low shots, like the one on 18, they showed a couple times of the ball rolling down the front. That was a great camera angle. But we only saw that on, like, a handful of shots.
How do you get that? Just on the ground camera?
On the ground, lower, just... You know, there's no fans out there. Why did they have to be so high up?
In the tower.
It's because it's like, this is how we set them up every week. There's no foresight. There's just no creativity. Tommy Roy doesn't give a shit about golf courses. It's very apparent. Like, you had one of the best golf courses in the world, and they did how many features on it? About 0, you know?
Huh. I'm thinking about that now.
Like, and that's the thing that you knew was going to happen with Fox had Gil Hanse in the booth for every single U.S. Open. They did wonderful features. I'll never forget Faxon's feature at the Country Club of Charleston during the U.S. Women's Open last year. It was fantastic on the greens, on Rainer's greens. They used lower camera angles there to showcase those greens. Like it was a very poor effort from NBC beyond just the word vomit that was being spewed from the analyst chair.
That's where I was going to next, because then when you get in the position of it kind of being a 2-horse race and then a 1-horse race, like the other star of the show is the course, right? And you got to be able to kind of adapt and, you know, pivot from the 1-horse and the course. And all we ended up with was the doubters and the second guessers and the haters and Bryson showing him off.
For five holes.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean.
One other thing I'll just add, just in the interest of equal time, I talked to someone in television this week, no one affiliated with this, no one affiliated with NBC. It sounds like really, really fucking hard to do sports right now, just with the pandemic. I'm not saying that this excuses what you're talking about, being able to do more pre-produced stuff on the course and more low cameras. Like, it's another thing you just gotta take into consideration.
True.
That's all.
I mean, and it was awesome that we even had it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
In March, didn't think this was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Who was most disappointing for you today?
Why don't you go with your most disappointed?
Rory. That just, at least to have it happen. I know he had a 3% chance of winning. At least to have it happen an hour in or an hour and a half in or on the back nine. Just throwing one out there in the middle of the fairway, nuking the ball, and then just hitting a total flake wedge. And what did he, three putt, four putt? He four putted for double, right? He didn't get up the hill, came back down. Went, I think he four putted. That, I think, you know, I wouldn't say he's, you know, he's not most disappointing because he didn't win, because he was a long shot to begin with, but just completely bowing out.
Not doing anything simple, like basically just getting dropped from coverage.
Yeah, but having it happen on the first hole, all the things that we talk about with Rory in major championships where he'll like be the best driver in the world, strokes gained off the tee and all that other stuff came to fruition on that first hole. He hit a shitty short iron. I think, you know, it was probably a wedge. And then just dillied about on the green and he's done, gone. And I kind of needed him to at least make it interesting for an hour or so. So he was my most disappointing. I don't think you could say Wolf was that, right? I mean, it's kind of impossible to, you know, dump on him. So
you can't dump on Wolf. I mean, he played pretty good golf, and you know, especially for nine holes, and then that Bryson Eagle on nine was something else.
I know, that was a kick in the shorts, right? I mean, Wolf's in closer and
Wolf makes the putt too, which
I know
was,
that was yeah
but you know, one of the things too was like that's underrated about that eagle putt was that Wolf didn't get the tee, and it's like a psychological thing where you're playing twosomes and this guy's just kicking your ass and you can't do anything to get the tee. I think Wolf lost the tee, he lost the tee on the third hole. So from four on, he didn't have the tee the rest of the day.
Is that right?
Yeah. Wow. That's something that's like a, if you're playing, like there's just a mojo thing.
Psychological.
And you just feel down because you know you're getting your ass kicked when you never have the tee box.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest, I think more so than just the pure stroke value of Bryson's putt was that he didn't relinquish the tee, and at that point it had, I mean, pretty much all day it was, nobody made any sort of a run at him. It was match play all day.
Did you expect Louis to actually contend, or did
No.
you expect him to just be Louis?
This is what Louis does.
I know. It's kind of unbelievable. So do you have anybody who was disappointing? It's hard to do that with the
I'll
way Bryson played.
I'll tell you who I was disappointed with. I was disappointed with all the volunteer spotters on the first hole.
Oh!
Harris English loses a ball on the first hole, 20 yards off the fairway.
You got like eight guys in contention. Seven guys could win. First hole. He's not like deep out in the woods. And it wasn't that far off, right? I mean, there's... That's between what it was between the first fairway and the ninth fairway. And what happened there? I mean, that, I guess that is a disappointing.
How about Zach beating Rory?
I called that last night. I said that was going to be like a, you know, the scratch player playing with like a nine handicap. He's going to bring him down. And that was it.
First round of the club championship when the eight beats the number one seed.
Yeah. Exactly. You had to watch Zach poof one, smother hook left on one, and it was over after that.
And that outfit Zach was wearing was just horrible.
Terrible. Terrible. And then he beats him head to head. Unbelievable.
I hate that the blue and blue hat with then the same color blue and blue on it. It's just like, what are you, fucking six? Sorry, I've been using the F-bomb too much tonight.
No, you're fine. You're good.
Apologies to anybody.
All the kids listening in.
Gets offended
in
by that.
Yeah. Apologies.
I'll tell you what. Westy played. He doubled 18, I think, for 72.
He had a good round going. Yeah. Then he went right to the bar in the clubhouse.
Did he?
Right to the bar. Oh, yeah. How many guys do you think play four rounds at the U.S. Open? And, like, you know, the guy who just played there, he went straight to the bar, took a picture of it. He just started drinking at the Wayne Foote bar.
Amazing. Kind of,
who's doing that? Who's doing that in the professional, you know, these tour pros?
Well, he had his girlfriend caddying for him. Do you think they're off to, like, the Portugal Islands next?
I don't know. They could be.
T13. Pretty good finish now, for Westy.
Now that they're over here, they might be going somewhere. Yeah, that is. That is a good finish for Westy. How about DJ with the back door? Finau, I don't know where Finau and DJ coming in the back door is quite predictable.
The Reed weekend was just disappointing.
Was it? I mean, wasn't he a house of cards for the beginning? Like, he was missing every fairway, and I guess the fairways, you know, whatever we talked about, fairways don't matter, but he was not.
Well, they matter when you hit it like 300, not 360.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. That's the problem, is the fairway matters. Yeah. A lot for 300 hitters, and it matters for 330, but it doesn't matter nearly as much.
Right. Anybody else that kind of underwhelmed or impressed you? It became the Rice and Wolf show.
John Rahm just underwhelmed me for the second straight major.
Yeah.
He just didn't. He had it going today, and then he plays the last five holes four over. You know, he had it two under. I know it was the lowest round on the course. He was playing a great round. It's just like the guy for now eight majors rounds this year has just been extraordinarily underwhelming.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Who knows? I mean, it's hard. I mean, he still finished T23, which
right
isn't horrible, but he's at the point where majors matter.
I think he's got to work on that temperament a little bit more. Maybe the temperament's just not
all the way
there. I
would love to get Azinger's thoughts on that. What held him back this week?
Temperament's not all the way there yet.
Wasn't there a picture of him of a staff in a club?
Yes. I want to say 18, maybe, something like that. I will say, while we're on the subject of complimenting and, you know, taking shots at random players, I got to shout out Bubba Watson. He was donating his entire check to Sally. You know, the hurricane destroyed, that flooded up, you know, his home. I like I said in the past, Bubba's, you know, not my person, cup of tea necessarily, but, you know, he's someone who's tried to become a better person and do good. And I think that's all you can kind of, not to get too sappy, that's all you can ask of people. It doesn't make him any less weird, but he's really sort of evolved as a person.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
From a personality trajectory polarizing nature, isn't Bryson and aren't Bubba and Bryson kind of similar?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like
absolutely.
burst onto the scene, like popular, and then the more they talk, the more they get themselves in trouble, become almost hated.
Becomes quite clear that they're not like super smooth, maybe socially, you know, I won't say they're awkward, but maybe they are, you know, kind of thing.
Become disliked.
That might be a good comp. Oh, yeah. I mean, the Bubba thing was like white hot. The people were like, get this guy the hell out of here. Like 2014 in there, you know, going into 20, like after that. Because, well, he would be berating his caddy and everybody else. I mean, that was pretty clear. So
I feel like Bubba has had like a, not a resurrection, but he has, over the course of his career, improved greatly. He's become far less dislikable over the years. He says stupid stuff, but it's almost like we've adjusted and we understand that, hey, this guy, he's gonna say dumb stuff, he's just different, you know. And is Bryson gonna get to that point?
I don't think he even does say that dumb stuff anymore. He says like vacuous stuff, but yeah, he doesn't make too many verbal mistakes anymore. Bryson, to be clear, like this year he was, you know, upbraiding rules officials, asking for third opinions, trying to get a sketchy ruling from fire ants.
Not that far away from Bubba. berating caddies. He's berating cameramen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Protecting the brand. Like, yeah. This does not make Bryson, you know, some sort of, I don't know. It doesn't validate that behavior at all, is what I would say. We got a lot of validation talk today. I don't know. That's it. You got anything else? Danny Lee story? The Danny Lee video came out. That guy shouldn't be allowed to play in a USGA championship for a while.
Really?
I don't think... Yeah. You can't do that. Then slam your putter in your bag.
You're not going to do that to Phil after what he did at Shinnecock?
Yeah, well, he should have been thrown out. He should have been DQ'd right then and there, too. I think what bothered me more is the WD.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not talking about the six putt. Like, that was... What's crazy about that is he was putting for 73. It wasn't like the end of a 82.
He was going to be in like the top 20 of the tournament.
What is he doing? And what pissed me off more is like the hit slamming into his bag and then WDing. That's the bigger issue. Anything else? The showdown. This is what... Justin Leonard characterized this as a showdown between the modern golfer and a classic course that was supposed to be modernized. I think we've hit on that plenty tonight, right?
It wasn't modernized. It was restored.
I know.
Something that gets lost, too, is a lot of the edges that they brought back
weren't
funnel balls back, which is cool. It's the way it was designed. Like, that's neat. But, like, perfect example, Ogilvy, where he chipped from in 17, is green. Now, and that ball would have funneled back towards the hole. He would have had a 15-foot par putt instead of a chip. So that's part of where, you know, people are like, that's why we didn't see as many missed greens.
If you're the USGA, are you happy? Are you happy walking out of this? Are you Wingfoot's, you know, going to be part of this anchor rotation and all that sight and stuff like that? Nothing giving you pause or you're not happy, unhappy with anything?
Nothing giving me pause. If I'm John Bodenhammer, I'm looking at the game and I'm saying, okay, I'm not setting up courses necessarily the best way to challenge today's player. And I'm looking and trying to figure out what shots and what situations are the most challenging for players, not like Bryson, but the power players of today. And I'm doing that. One other note, Tony Finau.
Yeah.
Another top 10 at a major.
Yeah.
He's got 1, 4, 7, 10 top 10s in majors and 17 starts.
Unbelievable.
That's like insane. Like, we did all those spotlights, anything at 50%.
Yeah.
He's above 50. He's like 70% almost. 60%.
One thing I will add, I think fans would have had a significant impact. Not
Harris English wouldn't have lost his ball.
Would have impacted it a little bit more. I think Bryson was far and away the best player. I'm not sure it changes the outcome, but I don't think, you know, the New York fans, as they, you know, air quotes, the New York fans would have gone easy on Bryson. Maybe they wouldn't have gone easy on Matt Wolff. I don't know. I just think it changes the entire... It adds more variables for Bryson to start calculating and start, you know, short circuiting and things like that. I think it would have been harder on Bryson than it would have been on Matt Wolff. And one other thing, we're talking about Bryson. It's not all, you know, validation. The pace of play. It's they got another, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but they were, you know, a hole and a half behind again. And it just feels like if you're going to talk about making wholesale changes about the ball going too far, this also feels like a time where we have like the real conversation to change that or put them on the clock at least or pop them. Yeah. I don't know. But that's every day. He was
like,
a
if you're
going to
have a 3-minute ball search policy for pace of play that ruins Harris English's chances, you should enforce the pace of play of players too, because it playing quickly is a skill, as we've talked about on this podcast numerous times.
Yeah. So what was Harris English? So there was like a little bit of a backup, right? And so he goes back to the first tee, and like Bryson, they're already like a hole behind by like four.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels like another thing. I don't know that, again, doesn't take away from his win. Neither does the bomb and gouge nature of the game. He's the best. He was the best far and away this week. But we'll always talk about that and pace of play no matter what. Anything else? You good?
I'm good.
This was a great week. We appreciate
awesome
everybody
week.
Listening. You guys have, I don't know, we've felt really good about how things have come back since golf came back, and we're appreciative of you guys making it more fun to do this. Jim Furyk won the peer insurance thing.
Oh.
You excited? Ernie, I guess, kind of kicked it late, kind of booted it. And
that's
there was a playoff going on the LPGA. We got this little activation station out in the Ozarks this week coming up. Oh. We got other stuff.
Big activation week.
we got that coming up.
Fresh off a major.
Fresh off a major, straight into the resort circuit, or I don't know, the activation
circuit. You won't be seeing much content from us on that, but
no,
we'll cover it, but
we're not gonna do dailies. I guess there's only one day that I could do, so
I'm not gonna be doing a massive course profile.
Okay, all right, Tiger's new course. Okay, thank you guys for everything. We will be back on Wednesday. Appreciate it.